Hello, everybody. Welcome back into Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Satter. I'm joined by co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSatter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You also follow our Locked On Suns to play generate at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining you guys today for our Tuesday episode, 24 hours out after the preseason finale, where we saw the Suns go 2-2 in their four games. Saw some good stuff where we saw a lot of interesting takeaways, I would say, Brendan, from this preseason slate so far, Utah.
Yeah, a lot to talk about, a lot of different moments and performances and kind of takeaways like at a schematic level. So, yeah, I think it was interesting, and the fact that everybody got to play and the starters sitting, some of the different injuries, it definitely gave us a lot to chew on.
I'm going to start off here. We're going to go just back and forth here with our overarching takeaways and go just one per person or one per each time if we overlap a little bit. But for me, Brent, I'm going to start off here, and this might seem like it's a little easy, so to say, but I mean, even with Igor Kokoschkov's offense last year, I feel like it wasn't modern enough. But I feel like Monty Williams and what he's done so far, and from what we've seen, he hasn't even opened up the playbook even enough to have Devin Booker go off yet, which will be even more three-pointers, I imagine, in the game. But I'm really liking the spacing in the system, and I'm liking just the modern creativity I'm seeing so far. Just a lot of pick and roll concepts, a lot of spacing from guys like Cam Johnson and others. I just think just the offense and the structure of the system on that end makes a lot more sense than Denver, Igor.
Yeah, it's tough for me because I do agree with you that it's obviously looked a lot smoother. It's been easier, I think, for everybody just to execute the base principles of what they're trying to do. It's been easier for the high-end scoring talent to execute, finishing plays. It hasn't always been pretty, but I think, on the whole, you have to like what you see compared with what we saw last year. It's just been hard for me to separate that from, it's not going to be an Igor versus Monty thing for me necessarily, but it is just tough when you upgrade the talent so much to wonder, like, is it really necessarily the system and some of that stuff? Because I agree, like, I don't think we've even seen the full breadth of what they're going to try to do here. Or is it just a talent upgrade that makes everything look that much smoother? It is kind of a chicken and egg type of thing, or however you want to phrase it, but I think you have to be pleased with both. You have to be pleased with what the talent has been able to do in looking like how you expected it to look, really just a legitimate NBA roster for the first time in a while. But I also think there is a lot to like, mainly with Ricky Rubio and the stretch bigs as far as an offense that they can build on going forward.
That's a fair point, Brandon, there about Igor, because he never had really a point guard until Tyler Johnson. I don't even really think he's a point guard now in the Suns system. I think it's more so Ty Jerome. We'll have to see on that, of course, but I wonder how it would have fared last year if they had a Ricky Rubio-type point guard instead of those rookies. That's, of course, in the past now. But
and the shooting,
Yeah, of course. The shooting as well is a big part of this. And that's another point we could talk about later if you want to, Brennan. But I feel like just the overall, like you mentioned in your answer there, is the talent upgrade too alongside this. I just think the more – we talked about this on last night's episode, but I think we're both in agreement now that the roster upgrades just all around here, coach – roster from like the bottom 15 to 6 around that range. I feel like all that is on the table here as far as being actual legitimate improvements, and we can see that pretty clearly.
Yeah, and I think, some of the specific position groups, or I guess skill sets maybe is a better word for it, that they targeted, you can see why they did it, and the plan already kind of becoming apparent here with, especially as I mentioned before, the stretch big men, Kaminsky and Šarić especially. You could even include Aaron Baines there. It maybe is not the highest ceiling move to go get those three players. I don't necessarily think they'll be around, any of them, when the Suns are a more competitive team and, making a playoff push or, hopefully for this group, a championship push or whatever their future is. I don't necessarily think those three guys will be around, but you do get why they thought it was so important to put them in place here. And what, it's not just the ability to space the floor, but it's the smart player, the smart playing style that they each bring. Baines and what his screening is able to do and obviously his defense. But even just on offense, he's already spacing the floor, already setting those screens. That stuff's already coming along. Kaminsky being really a revelation as far as adding a little bit more to his offensive game than anyone really expected from him, at least in the preseason. And then Šarić rebounding from a pretty terrible start to the preseason and flashing, you know, some playmaking himself and some better shot making inside to, again, just kind of prove that he can play a part here and that having that consistency of style in that front court could really help this team.
Yeah, really all around here, from what we've talked, we've hit it ad nauseum throughout the offseason. And also, we can finally see evidence in preseason that the roster and just the all-around upgrade that James Jones made to this team looks to be a legitimate upgrade as we're going to try to – they're trying to build around Devin Booker and DeAndre and lead hopefully to a playoff and hopefully a title contender within the next couple of years. But what other point did you want to hit on, Brian, as far as any others takeaways you've had so far?
Yeah, my first one here is – I was spending a lot of time trying to figure out how to frame this, and I'm curious if you've noticed it. I know just with our schedules, I was up in Flagstaff, so maybe that's where this is coming from, or I don't really know. But it's just like a, and I don't want to seem like a homer or anything here either, but you know, this is our third season being around this team, so I feel pretty comfortable saying that this is a. The environment on a daily basis, whether you are around at a practice, whether you are there before a game, you know, in the locker room. And it's also obviously a byproduct of this being extremely early in the season or before the season, really, you know. But even just comparing it to the same time last year, I think that there is a feeling of connectedness and like a sense of pride in what they're doing that hasn't really been there. I think that there's been a lot of unease and fighting for yourself and kind of looking out for your own best interests and questioning the people around you a little bit. That's really been the vibe of the locker room and the organization kind of behind the scenes that I've felt until this season, and I think it really changed. Is that kind of track with how you felt?
I think so. I mean, I think the main difference there, I think it kind of goes back to our point about the roster overall, is that you actually have seasoned veterans on this team. I know what the NBA is like. In the last couple of years, we've seen former GM Ryan McDonough build a roster just around pretty much trying to tank and get the number one pick every year. He finally succeeded. They got fired 6 months later. But the dearth of talent on this team was so low that we had Mike James, a revelation for like a two-week stretch in a couple of years ago, who was a rookie from overseas. And we talk about other players along that line. And now this year we have Aaron Baines, Frank Kaminsky, Ricky Rubio, players know their way around the NBA, and Dario Saric too. Like, players know what the NBA is like and they know how to run a functioning NBA system. And I hate to bag on Josh Jackson, but I feel like Josh Jackson's kind of the perfect example of this. Like, kind of just didn't know what the function of a team first mentality was like. And we kind of saw it on a nightly basis where he just didn't know how to function and really make the right reads and really make some bad shot decisions all the time. And I haven't seen that so far. I mean, maybe Kelly Oubre's had a couple instances there where he was kind of me first at times start the preseason. But outside of that, it just seems like the whole mentality and function of this team and the culture of this team feels a lot more different than it did, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that it bleeds between the court and off the court. And so maybe what we're starting to see now is that the product kind of speaking for itself. Not that they blew the doors off anybody in the preseason by any means. You know, they were very up and down overall, I thought, but at the very least, you know, you're not losing the last three quarters to the breakers, right? You're not embarrassing yourself in the first three games of the season as they did in 2017-18. So I think that that's true, that it can feed off of itself where the on-court stuff working can just go a very long way, I think. And that's relatable. That's not just a sports thing, right? Like, you put a lot of work into something, and when it pays off, you're going to be more positive about it and be able to work with a team on a higher level than if it's really not working. So I guess it'll be something, you know, Monty Williams said it last night. He was asked how and when, basically, he'll know that what he's putting in place is working. And he said when they get punched in the mouth. And so I think that'll put a test to my first takeaway here is it's all nice right now, right? It's very rosy because there's no reason to be upset. But when they get blown out by 30 to some great team, which we know will happen, or we assume will happen at some point, what happens then? And I guess we'll find out.
Before I dive into my next takeaway, we're going to take a quick break and about our main sponsor of today's show, which is Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purse of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, at checkout. All right, Brandon, my second takeaway of preseason, and I feel like 2018 class, from the rookie standpoint, we kind of got spoiled with Ayton and Bridges being NBA ready, but take out 2018 for a second, go back to 2017, 2016. The 2019 rookie class, it's probably because their age too, because this is probably the first time in forever the Suns have taken two experienced players, but Ty Jerome and Cameron Johnson, especially Cam Johnson to me, looked like legitimate rotation players right off the bat, and players that aren't going to be making mistakes a lot early on. I think Jerome and Johnson, Cam Johnson shot 45% from three in preseason. Ty Jerome didn't shoot that well, but overall you could tell just by his floor sense and his ability to command the second unit that he's definitely NBA ready himself. And I think it's just a great sign for the Suns team because, like we were talking about on last night's show, Jerome and Johnson playing so well in preseason to us makes it believe maybe if they still want to get minutes for Javon Carter, this might be an 11-man rotation instead of a 10-man rotation because those two guys.
Yeah, I think those were the variables that we weren't accounting for. I mean, we did a whole show kind of talking about, as we previewed the season, how much these rookies would play, whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, what skills they could bring to the table, how do they get on the court, all that stuff. And I think, you know, I was pretty certain that they wouldn't play much, and they proved me wrong in a big way. I think they really... not that I had any real insight, but I think that whatever the coaches were expecting, they also blew those expectations out of the water and earned, really, you know, like capital E earned. Like they might not have been as firmly in these plans as they are now. And whether it was on the practice court, in preseason games, or just how they handled themselves on a daily basis at work, I think kind of earned all A's this preseason and training camp period, and seemed to me to be pretty certainly a part of things. We talked a little bit about what that might look like in the rotation, but I think you're right that they, at least at the beginning, look to have hit maybe not two home runs, but like maybe a couple singles or a couple doubles.
Yeah, I think just compared to what we've seen in the past, especially just looking back to the 2016-2017 draft classes, and that was the historic failure those two classes were for the Suns team. I think just getting a consistency and then just a it's going to hit, at least get on the base. It's a big thing for this franchise because they have their building blocks in Booker and Ayton now, the two they hopefully are going to be future NBA superstars, but you need those role players around them. I think Johnson and Jerome are exactly that. But I think another point, I think we touched on this a little bit on last night's episode as well. If you haven't listened to that episode, go ahead and do so. We were recapping the last two preseason games, live talks to Resort Arena. But Cam Johnson, not only his shooting ability stands out to me, but he's holding his own defensively, and I think we talked about what we saw at North Carolina for good reason. There's a lot of film on it, but he was kind of a sieve, a black hole, so to say, on defense at points in North Carolina and even at Pittsburgh when I went back and watched some of those games. But at least now with the Suns, if he's guarding some two guards most of the time and even some threes, saw Michael Porter Jr. last night, so he can even switch to the four at some times as far as getting some taller wings on him. He's actually holding his own pretty well defensively so far.
Yeah, him and Michael Porter was a very interesting matchup of two guys who are way bigger in person than you're expecting. But I think it is nice to see. I mean, we really talked about it, I think, after the first preseason game, just because I think we were so surprised by it the very first time. And I think that it's just another way that he will continue to earn playing time, and another reason why I just can't imagine him not getting on the court. If, you know, whether he's shooting or whether he's making or not making shots is almost secondary, because you know that he can shoot. It's like the conversation we've been having about Devin Booker. It's like where his efficiency falls from there is a conversation, but no one is thinking after last season Devin Booker is now a bad shooter. So you know Cam Johnson can shoot. It's about what else is he doing to impact the game, and I think he's shown a lot to indicate that he won't just be a hot and cold shooter type like a Steve Novak or something. Like, this is a guy who can do some other stuff and will continue to get to spread his wings over the course of the season. My second takeaway here is I really think that it's becoming clear that the creation on this team, at least of the big minutes players, it's going to be Devin Booker and Ricky Rubio. I think counting on DeAndre Ayton to be a creator early in the year is not a smart thing. I think we need to at least put that on the back burner, press the pause button on any expectations that you're going to see DeAndre Ayton at the elbow dishing around the court or passing on the short roll or, like he said at the end of last year, taking the ball up the court in transition. I think the progress that he was hoping for offensively is coming along at a slower pace. And that's okay. I don't want to overreact to that. But what I am comfortable saying is I think we need to be realistic about what he's going to be able to do as a creator and maybe set our expectations a little lower than they were during the summer.
Yeah, I think Ayton's role will be a little more limited early on, at least just from what we've seen so far. And I think it's interesting. I think you hit on this maybe off the air before, but I think you noticed that Dario Saric is actually doing a lot of like ball handling drills pregame when he wasn't playing. And I think maybe he's going to be the big man that gets that role. And the more I think about that from Ayton's standpoint, maybe less creation for him. But I feel like the creation from a guy like Dario Saric then at that point could be even more important.
Yeah, it seems to me that he's going to be, if there is any front court initiation, which a lot of the players have talked about, and we know that at Monty's various stops along the way, that's been a way that his teams have played between Philadelphia, San Antonio, even back to New Orleans with David West, guys like that. He's always kind of targeted and made the best of some of those players. So that will happen, I think, but I think you're right that it'll be more of a Saric, even maybe Kaminsky type of situation, and we'll probably only see Ayton and Baines as ball movers and initiators, really, and dribble handoffs and simplified situations like that rather than really high level like ball handling, which is fine. I don't think we should always expect Ayton to be able to do everything, but there was at least part of me that thought maybe that would come sooner rather than later, and I think maybe there's still hope that happens this year, but probably not right away. Let's take one more break before we get into our final takeaways here. Before we do so, a reminder to subscribe to our show if you like what you're hearing, if you are excited for the season, whatever your attachment is to the Suns, make sure we are the way that you're keeping up with them because we're the best way, I think. It's just my opinion, but keep up with us that way. And if you like what you're hearing, support the show by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to the show. It helps us get in front of more people's eyes and spread what we do to more people. So we appreciate it and hope you guys are ready for the week. I'll start off with our last takeaways here, looking back on the preseason. Mine is pretty broad, but also pretty simple, and it is that I really don't think this defense, I don't think the defense is gonna cut it. And I think they're going to have to win a lot of games on offense here. The numbers are hard to look at with the preseason because it's just so far away minutes-wise and effort-wise from what I think we'll see during the regular season. But not great, statistically not great by what we've been able to see watching the games. And, the talent level backs that up. I don't think anyone was expecting the defense to be awesome. And I don't think we have any reason to think it will be great just based on what we've seen. So a long road of work on that end to come, I think.
Maybe this gives more credence to our thought when we had the episode, I believe in September, Brennan, that this team might be like the 2018-19 Kings where, I mean, from that standpoint, they had a horrible defense too, and they might have to win most of these nights. The Suns, even, if they're going to be a high-paced team like Monty Williams wants them to be, which I think is a great thing for them to be a high-paced team, it might have to be nights where if they win games, it's going to be like 122 to 117.
Yeah, it's going to be pace and shooting, I think, that wins them games against good teams. I mean, I think they can be competitive with lesser talented teams because there finally are some in the league that are less talented. That's nice to have actually be favored in certain games, but against the best teams or against similarly matched teams, it's going to be a matter of, are the threes going in? Can they get easy buckets in transition on the offensive glass? Things like that, because I don't think they're going to be able to stop good offenses very often here. And I mean, to go through some of the numbers really quick, They're giving up the – they're really middle of the pack in everything on offense and defense just by kind of some of the advanced – not even advanced numbers, but just efficiency numbers. 52% effective field goal, that's 17th in the league. So pretty much league average in terms of the efficiency that they're allowing their opponents to get. They're allowing like middle of the pack number of – or efficiency on three-pointers, pretty much middle of the pack efficiency allowed from the rim. So – I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not a cause for alarm. If they could stay middle of the pack everywhere, I think you have to be pretty happy. But it's looked a lot worse than that. I think some of the numbers might be a little skewed from the preseason. Against starting lineups, they've gotten burned pretty badly.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I was looking at some net ratings earlier on the NBA stats site. And the starting lineups, at least just the five players that we are used to seeing, Ayton, Rubio, Booker, and those guys, their net ratings were the worst on the team by far. And I think that just goes to show you that the defense, at least in the starting unit for sure, just wasn't cutting it. And that could be a big thorn in their side this year. Because if you think about if Ayton hasn't improved much defensively as a rim protector, it's going to be a lot of pressure on a guy. Mikal's not going to be in the starting lineup in that sense. If it's not Mikal Bridges, there's going to be Kelly Oubre. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Kelly Oubre. And it's going to be an awful lot of pressure on Ricky Rubio, too, just to be a ball stopper in that point guard lineup.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, even with like the thing with the Ayton conversation defensively, and haven't really seen much more out of him than where he was at the end of last year. Again, it's preseason, but not seeing like a demonstrably different version of him. Just kind of probably slow progress again this season is what I'm expecting at this point. It's just tough too, because one thing that I was sort of hoping for to at least help him is a four who could be not an elite, you know, it's hard to find those guys, but a high level help defender to make up for some of those mistakes that we know he's bound to make. And Dario Saric is not that guy. Frank Kaminsky is not that guy. Even if they play small, you know, it's hard to trust Oubre to do that consistently. They've allowed 68% field goal percentage at the rim. That's 27th in the NBA. That's the one area where they've been pretty atrocious. Everything else pretty reasonable. That's one area where they've been pretty bad. So I think, you know, the big men are a lot of the reason why there. And it's going to be something that I think they struggle with all year. But what's your last one here?
Yeah, my last one, I know Monty Williams mentioned last night they didn't run anything for Devin Booker on purpose, and I think it's definitely going to be shown on opening night when he's going to have a really high usage. But I'm going to peek on DeAndre Ayton for a second here, because I feel like his usage is going to be a lot higher than we imagined, maybe it rising up to. Per NBA stats, his usage rate was 24.8% preseason, and that's compared to his NBA rookie season. It was around 20.8, so that's around a 4% jump, 3-4% jump for Ayton in usage, which is pretty much around what you see year one, year two. Big, I went and looked it up. Karl Anthony Towns had a 3.5% jump his rookie year to second year, and that was also Ricky Rubio's his point guard too. So I think that just goes to show you that maybe that was a good design by the Suns front office to get a guy like Rubio in there to help him get more touches in there for a guy like DeAndre Ayton. And we've seen it so far in preseason. Ayton's usually been the leading scorer for the Suns so far in his minutes and per 36 numbers. That kind of goes to show he's putting around 20-10. I think we're in for a good year for Ayton. I think the usage percentage is going to show that this year, but also the pick and roll amount of pick and rolls we've seen for this team. It's a lot more pick and roll man kind of moving for DeAndre Ayton this year than we saw last year.
Definitely. They're if you can say anything about him positively during the preseason, that sounds bad, but the number one positive takeaway from his preseason for me is the concerted effort on the part of his teammates to get him the ball and his ability to execute when he has it. That, you know, that's going to build trust from those guys. It's going to create chemistry of knowing when and how he likes to get the ball and what he can do and all those things. And, you know, he's also left some points on the table. He's bobbled some passes. We typically don't think of him, but he has good hands. I don't think that's really up for debate at this point. So good to see that when he goes back to his usual level of, you know, catching the ball, which is not a problem for him normally, that he'll be able to score even more. So offensively getting those opportunities, I think he'll have as many of them as he can handle this year. And with how much of a struggle it was to even get the ball to the guy last year at some points, that's definitely a sight for sore eyes.
I think this goes to show, too, just with how much Ayton's usage has bumped up, at least in preseason action, and also what we expect him to do this year. Just the jump up that we've seen in the point guard spot from the carousel from 2017 after the Eric Bledsoe Salon situation where he tweeted out, "I don't want to be here anymore," to Ricky Rubio finally in 2019. I think the visible improvement is there. I think it's going to be just huge for not only Ayton, but also the rest of the guys out there.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, as you kind of hinted at just a moment ago, the real version. And it might not come on opening night, but I'm excited to see more of the partnership between Booker and Rubio be fleshed out. And how does that impact Ayton and the rest of the players on the court with them, as well as those two specifically? What does it look like for them, and can they maintain their effectiveness separately and together and all those different things? We didn't get to see a lot of that, as you said. Monty acknowledged that he didn't run the full level of offense for Booker because really, you know, there's not much to learn from can Booker like make an open spot up three or get to the free throw line. There's not much we didn't know about Booker. So getting everybody else ready and then unleashing those two is going to be fun to watch over the first couple weeks of the year.
Yeah, it certainly will be. And I think just what we learned from this preseason was a lot, as you guys heard on today's show. And we went through a lot of notes for you guys. But anything else you want to cover on today's show, Brent, before we finally get diving into the regular season action here within the next 8 days?
No, I spent the whole week, or I don't even know, like all month, I've thought that this first NBA regular season game for the Suns was on Tuesday. Now I'm realizing it's on Wednesday, and that's one more day of waiting. But that's fine. I'm very excited, but we will have plenty of stuff to talk about between now and then and get everybody as ready as humanly possible for these games after months of prepping.
Yeah, stay tuned to Locked On Suns. Be with you guys throughout the week here and leading up to the season opener on October 23rd. And stick with us throughout the season here. If you haven't already subscribed to our show, whatever platform you're listening to, make sure you give us a 5-star review if you like what you're hearing. This will be it for today's episode, guys. Appreciate you listening in. As always, back with you guys tomorrow for next episode.